So we're almost at peak for tree season. If you haven't been keeping track, it's pretty out there. Take a look all around and about you as you're walking the dog or getting outside. It's going to be cool for a few days, warming up next week. And we'll talk a little bit about what getting cool means towards the end here. How is are the case numbers and such doing in our area? Not bad, still coming down. Case rates in cases per 100,000 per day for Forsyth County are at 16 now, and in Guilford County 15, and again that's per 100,000. So that is about 30 to 50 for our county, and for Guilford County maybe a little bit closer, 50 to 70. But a lot better than it was at the beginning of September, and still coming down. They're coming down slower each day, which means that if you remember your high school algebra, the slope is getting less. And so we're not quite seeing the amount of drop per day as we were last week, for instance. I still think that if you plot it out right around and right before Thanksgiving, we'll be right around 10 cases per 100,000 per day. Maybe I should knock on wood and throw some salt over my shoulder, but I think that's what's going to happen. And then as we get to that point, I think you'll see some communities in our area, the larger communities, that'll be talking about bringing down the mask mandate. Just a few words about that. When the mandate goes away, you still need to think a little bit about yourself, about what masking can do for you, and whether or not you should still wear a mask. When the mandate goes away, it means that people should think about protecting themselves just as much as from protecting others, maybe even more so. So particularly those who are older and have higher chances of having a complication from COVID, people over 65, people who are immunocompromised, people with a lot of underlying medical problems, even though you've gotten boosted, you'll still want to, probably still want to wear a mask through the respiratory virus season. And we're going to talk about that in a minute too, because it's not all just COVID anymore. The other aspect is for schools. It's probably going to be best for schools just to finish out the semester, and then that'll give us a chance to see how the respiratory virus season and COVID's going to go over the Christmas break, and we can decide what to do with the school mandates when we come back. Because once we're through Thanksgiving, there's only a few weeks, as you know, until the holiday break. The one thing that I wanted to mention is that in the news this morning, we're talking about vaccine mandates for businesses over 100 people. If you remember back in September, President Biden announced that the federal government through the Department of Labor will be asking companies with over 100 employees to have a mandate for their employees to get vaccinated, or for those who aren't going to get vaccinated, who get exempted, to have a weekly testing program. So we'll see how this goes. I will say that mandates work. There's no two ways about it. When a company or an entity mandates vaccine, a lot more people get vaccinated. So for the standpoint of getting us out of the COVID pandemic, it'll be extremely helpful. I know there's controversy about it. I won't get into that. And we'll see how that plays out between now and January 4th, which is the date when the mandate comes into force. So that gives companies a little bit of time to get their people vaccinated. Speaking with some of the large companies in our region here, who I help advise on this, a lot of them are already got pretty high rates of vaccination, so they don't have too much further to go. There are some that have a further to go, including city and county governments. that mandate applies to all health care, acute care and chronic long-term care. So that will all mean all employees in acute care settings and in healthcare settings will need to get vaccinated or, if exempted, weekly tested. And I know for our health systems in the area, our mandates have all come down and are finished. And we're running in a very, very high percentage of vaccinated people in our health systems here. And that's great. Patients can feel reassured that their healthcare workers have been vaccinated or have a legitimate reason to be exempted from it, and then will be tested weekly. A little bit about mandates. One thing that I wanted to talk a little bit about right now is influenza. So we've already started to see cases of influenza here in the Triad, and that's early. Normally, we don't really start seeing this until December, early or mid-December. So I really want to make an appeal for people to get their flu vaccine this year. And it's interesting, our flu vaccination percentages are way down compared to a normal year. I don't know whether it's because people think that if they got the COVID vaccine, they don't need a flu vaccine, or it's just they wanted to space the shots out some more. But we need to get our flu shots. So across the country, there have been outbreaks in universities, including some here in our area. And while flu isn't quite as severe as COVID, and it doesn't have nearly the lethality that COVID can have, it still puts people in the hospital, particularly older people and people who are very young, under the age of 2 or 3, and then people with underlying health problems. And whether you get hospitalized for COVID or flu, you're still hospitalized, and that's not a good thing. So we need to get our flu vaccine. It'll also be, as communities unmask and schools unmask, we need that vaccine, both the COVID vaccine and the flu vaccine, to back us up, because when the masks come out, viral dispersion will increase, transmission will increase, particularly in areas where people get together in close settings, such as schools, holiday parties, universities, workplaces, so on and so forth. So when the masks come out, the needle needs to go in, and that includes COVID and flu. By the way, you can get your COVID vaccine and your flu vaccine at the same time. We just pick one arm for each. And I really, really encourage that. I got a bad feeling about the flu season this year. Not to be a pessimist, but I think it's going to be formidable. And we need to get vaccinated. Also, there's drugs for flu. Oseltamivir and zanimivir, Relenza and Tamiflu. And so if there's flu that gets into your family or into close contacts, and if you have a higher risk of complications from flu, you should take one of those to prevent yourself from getting it. And you can call your doctor about that. If you get flu, the CDC is asking people to be treated for it because it cuts down on transmission. And it cuts down on viral shedding. And if you get flu, stay home. Don't go to school. Hang out. You don't have to quarantine like you do for COVID for the full 10 days. You can stay home until you've been 24 hours without fever, and then you can go back to work. If you're in healthcare, make sure you wear your mask when you do so. So that's a little bit about flu. There'll be other viruses going around this spring too, colds and such. So masks do protect us from all of those. So if you don't want to get sick, wear a mask. If somebody asks you, why are you wearing a mask? Just tell them, I don't want to get sick. It's a good reason. And I certainly understand that. vaccines for kids this week, big news. 5 to 12-year-olds It got an FDA approved last week. Studies look great, by the way. I'm really impressed. High efficacy, well over 90%, and great safety profile. And in the clinical trials done, no serious adverse events. The vaccine that's approved first is Pfizer's vaccine, messenger RNA vaccine, and it is a less of a dose than the adult vaccine. It's one third, and we found that that dose provides exactly that level of immunity, over 90% protection. Kids respond great. They're more robust in their immunologic response, and that's good news. Using less antigen means maybe a little less pain, a little less fever afterwards, although that still can happen. So if your child feels a little bit feverish or uncomfortable after getting the vaccine, give them some children's ibuprofen or children's Tylenol. Works great, and the kids will respond well to that. The vaccine availability. So the way the state is doing it is that it's going to roll out in three waves as they get vaccine from the federal government so that we can distribute it equitably, because for the first few weeks, I think the demand will outweigh the supply a little bit. And so how do you get an appointment? Well, with Wake Forest Baptist Health. We opened up yesterday at the Downtown Health Plaza, big article in the Winston-Salem Journal this morning that you can look at, and appointments are available. And you can get those by calling 336-70-COVID or go through My Wake Health and or www.wakehealth.edu/vaccine, and then you can get the locations where they're being given. Forsyth County Health Department is starting their scheduling for appointments later in the day tomorrow and Friday, and their first day of giving vaccines for kids will be Saturday. A company called StarMed has already been accepting appointments. And if you find StarMed on the internet, you can make an appointment for, I think, even today and tomorrow. And then Novant Health has started this morning making appointments in their locations. So lots of places to go get vaccines for your 5 to 12-year-old. Talk a little bit about, talk to your kids about why they're getting vaccinated, why it's a good idea. I've yet to meet a child who likes getting a shot, but it's a good idea for them. So, you know, I have parents ask me, you know, really, why should I get my child vaccinated? You know, I know that COVID's not as bad as in kids. Well, there are a few reasons. One is that occasionally it is bad. Fortunately, it's not common, but occasionally it can be. And the odds of having something bad happen from COVID to your child is just really hard to think about. Because even though it may be unusual, and it may be it's only 1 in 5,000 kids get hospitalized or get MIS, that if it's your child, that's 100%, and that's a big deal. Two is no one wants their kids to get sick. And if your child does get COVID, they're home from school for 10 days. And then if there are transmissions with the family to you, even though you're vaccinated, you might get a breakthrough infection, and then you're home for 10 days. Nowhere to spend the holidays. And virtual school is not as good as real school. So if your child doesn't get sick, they stay in school, and that's great. And then the third thing is just under a third of our cases of COVID that are being transmitted this fall are in children. And if we can cut that down, that means less transmission in general, and that means our communities can get under the thumb of COVID quicker. And so there are good reasons to get vaccinated. I'm very confident about the vaccine. That if there are serious adverse events, they'll be extremely rare, probably less rare than or more rare than even what we've seen with adults, and those are pretty darn rare. And so I've chosen to have my 7-year-old child vaccinated, and we'll be doing that this week. My wife and I made that decision. So I've had some good questions sent to me by in the last week or so about the child vaccine. So one of them is how will we know what dose to give to kids? Based on age or weight or a combination of both? Since some younger kids can weigh as much or more as older ones. That's a good question. So some kids are a little bigger and grow a little faster. So if your child's 11 and a half, but is the size of a 15-year-old, what do you do as far as the dose goes? Well, first of all, you don't need to choose the dose. The vaccine provider will be giving the dose that's based on age. And that's been defined by the state and the standing orders for the state for vaccination. And the reason why we're doing it that way is by age rather than by weight is because the study, the big study in kids, was done by age. And we found out that kids, even though they're knocking on the door of being 12 years old, responded just as well as the third dose vaccine as those older kids who got the full dose. So you can be confident that a third dose vaccine in a child up to the age 12, even though they may be a bit bigger, is going to work just as well. You don't have to worry about that or think about that. The other question I've gotten is, what if my child is turning 12 on January 1? So if they get the first dose and then their 3 weeks are up for their second dose after January 1, do they then get the full dose? And I think the way it's going to go is that you go... the dose will be from what it was for the first dose. So if you get the third dose pediatric vaccine on December 15, when you go the first week of January, you'll get a pediatric vaccine dose rather than the adult dose. That's the way the study was done, and it worked. So I think that's the way to do it. I'm getting some questions about, what about if my child had COVID? So. It's like, last April, my kid had COVID, or this past September, my kid had COVID. Should I still get him vaccinated? The answer to that is yes. And we know from adults, and so a few studies in kids, that the immunity provided by vaccination is more robust, in other words, stronger, and that it is broader, so that the potpourri of antibodies is more broad. To cover variants, and thus vaccination benefits you even if you've had COVID. And that's certainly true for adults. We have several studies now that show that, both of which were summarized and published last Friday by the CDC. And it looks like it'll be the same thing for kids. So even though your child has had COVID, as soon as they're better from the COVID and back at it, they can get the vaccine, and it's okay. And it's worthwhile to do. So it does look like vaccine-induced immunity is stronger, more robust, broader, and probably more longevity than having natural infection. And that question now has been solved. So. When you see those reports that natural infection is better than vaccine-induced infection, it's false. It is not true. And I've looked at the data myself. Question about boosters. For people who received the J&J and then want a Moderna booster, would they get the Moderna shot number 2 or number 3? And the reason why they ask that is because the Moderna booster is half of the dose of the full-dose Moderna vaccine. So we use a half dose for boosting with Moderna, and it's actually the same vaccine. You just give half as much of it, and that's considered a booster for Moderna. Why do we do that? Is because there's a little bit more antigen in the Moderna vaccine, a little bit more messenger RNA. So if you've had J&J and then you're getting boosted, you should get shot number 3, that's the half-dose Moderna, rather than a full-dose Moderna. And so I think that's the answer to this question. Could you get a Pfizer vaccine? Sure. As a booster, if you've had J&J, you know, I don't think it really makes that much difference. So if you go to CVS, Walgreens, or whatever vaccine sites you're going to, and they say, I'm sorry, we don't have Moderna today, but we got Pfizer, then just say, hey, Dr. Olds says that's good enough for me. Because I don't really think the clinical differences between Moderna or Pfizer as a booster is all that big of a deal. Do people who've gotten, who are getting a booster still need to be concerned about timing of mammograms? Yes. You'll want to put your mammogram off for 8 weeks after you've had a booster dose. And that's because you can get a little bit of lymph node swelling. When you get your booster dose, you probably won't even know it, but the mammogram sees it. And then you get called back to have your mammogram repeated 8 weeks later. And no one wants two mammograms when you need only one. Put it off for 8 weeks after you get the shot. Can you get the mammogram before you get your booster? Sure. So if you want to get your mammogram on the 14th of December and your booster is the 15th, no worries. The lymph node won't start to swell until after the vaccination. It doesn't before. One other thing in the news today, molnupiravir, the pill, antiviral for COVID, was licensed today in emergency use authorization in the United Kingdom. Stand by. I don't think the U.S. will be too far behind. It's being reviewed by the FDA now. I suspect before or on around Christmas that'll happen. And then you'll be able to get a prescription, go get it filled at the pharmacy, and take your COVID treatment at home. It'll especially be important for people who are at higher risk of COVID, who test positive, who have underlying health problems, or are older, to get this viral treatment. So this is like how we use Tamiflu for flu, but it's molnupiravir for COVID. The one really important thing about treatment with molnupiravir for COVID is you got to get it in for the first 48 hours or so of illness for really to get the full impact. And so that means when you get your headache and you get fever, you need to get tested. Is it flu or is it COVID? And then if it turns out to be COVID, you can go get the treatment, molnupiravir. But not quite ready yet. Looking around Christmas time or so, but that's good news on the horizon. But it does mean you have to turn too quickly and get your test done quickly so you know what it is. You got about 48 hours from the onset of symptoms if you really want to make a huge difference. So the cooler weather it reminds me that the holidays are just right around the corner. I think that we're going to have a better holiday season this year than we did last year. There won't be as much COVID circulating. But as I mentioned earlier, there'll probably be some other viruses. So, you know, if you're getting together in a holiday gathering, grab the patio heaters or the fire pits that we all bought last year and get them out and do your part outside, when you're eating. If you come inside for whatever reasons, put a mask on, and it'll help protect you from flu, it'll help protect you from COVID, it'll help protect you from one of the other 15 respiratory viruses that causes colds and flus. But I think you can get together, and I think we can celebrate holidays this year. Travel to visit loved ones. I think with a little bit of thought and paying attention to hand washing and masking, particularly in crowded public areas as you're traveling, and then getting vaccinated before you go. The families who are getting together who have high-risk people in the family, either by age or underlying health problems, that family should all be vaccinated really before getting together. And that does, that is a huge safety issue. So I think I'll open it up. We'll take some questions next week. If you have questions about shots for kids, if you have questions about boosters, if you have questions about how to get through the holidays and have fun but be safe, if you have questions, when will this all be over, go ahead and send them in through our social media or web pages, and we'll talk about them next week. So with that, are there any questions in the room today?
So we had a question that came in from a reporter down in Charlotte asking about the vaccination rates in North Carolina for pregnant women and what to tell pregnant women who may still be a bit hesitant.
Yeah, that's a good question. We should talk about pregnancy every week, actually. So the recommendation for pregnant women to get vaccinated has become stronger and stronger and stronger as we get through the pandemic for a lot of reasons. One is that we found that complications due to COVID in pregnant women is higher, clearly higher, than in a comparable aged woman who's not pregnant. And that women who get COVID, if the infection is moderate to severe, have a greater chance of miscarriage and losing the baby. And so getting vaccinated when you're pregnant will prevent that. We're very strongly advocating pregnant women, and that includes the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, the American Medical Association, just about every other medical professional society out there. If you're pregnant, get vaccinated. What are our rates in North Carolina? That's a good question. I know nationally it's about a third, I think, of what the rates are otherwise. I wouldn't expect it to be different in North Carolina. Maybe even a little less than a third, because I know pregnant women have been hesitant. But I really feel strongly that pregnant women should get vaccinated, and breastfeeding women too, because if you're breastfeeding and you get vaccinated, those antibodies go to your baby and they get 6 months of protection from you. And that's a great way to start your baby's life. That's a good question. Thank you.
Can you talk about, I think you already touched on this, but can you talk about the pace that you're expecting to be able to start vaccinating children?
The pace? Yeah, we have in our house, just our health system, for wave one and two, we have 7,000 doses available. Demand's going to be high initially, so, if you don't get it in wave one, when wave two gets out, we get more vaccine, you'll have a better chance. When wave three comes out, there'll be even more vaccine available. So I think the pace will be, pretty good, actually. It'll be a lot sharper and faster than what the initial rollout was last year for adults, just because there's more available. And there's less people, because it's only kids from 5 to 12. The corollary question, though, is what do you think about uptake? And I don't know. It's a little hard to predict. There's been some surveys out there that show maybe initially only 30% of parents will have their kids vaccinated initially. I wish that would be higher, and it should be higher. And I'm an advocate of it, obviously. Vera and I are having our child vaccinated. I think if you want to wait 1 or 2 weeks, you can. But if I would try to get your kids vaccinated before the holiday season, so that you can travel, so you can visit relatives, so you can have play dates, you can go to the gymnastics camp over the holiday or whatever. I would advocate trying to get it done so that you can get both doses in by Christmas time frame or Hanukkah.